next Sunday, I'm just devoting to why I think what I think in response to your questions. I'll explain myself on why I sounded like a wild man to you. I now realize at the start of the year we had a culture conflict. And I'll explain my whole gestalt, my whole viewpoint to you in great detail. I'll deal with the trip to America as well, because a lot of you have already been asked by a number of people. I just want to get back into... I taught already this morning on Baruch Hashem. I said, I hope it was a good shiur, and I want to say a very important shiur now. And next Sunday, I'll devote entirely to Inyana Diyoma. And if you have any questions you want to submit to me, I think I understand what the questions are. Do me a favor. Please listen to today's shiur for the girls and tell me that it came out okay. Let me know. If you can let me know tonight, call me and tell me that it's okay. I'll appreciate it. 660941. Write it down. You can call me as late as midnight. It doesn't matter. As long as I'm awake, I answer the phone. 660941. I'll respond and I'll put everything together next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem. Tuesday is also a very special shiur. And Ezra, you're in charge of bringing the box. Be here early Tuesday so we can get everything set up before class. Now, with that in mind, I just want to go further with the material today and bring us into modern times, actually, in this course. As I've mentioned all along, as we move on, the material becomes very enlightening. Please remember next Sunday, who will take responsibility to remind me, Dov, when I talk about the OU Convention, ask me about how this course saved the Torah, or saved the Torah in the OU. Pshuto kamashmo. You have it, Dov? Okay, remind me next week. Now, the question, after class last week, when we spoke about the whole question of the rabbis and that you need permission, l'sadeh kedushin, so we got involved with the Bishut and the Savri. And after class, a few fellas told me some very nice pshetlach, but it was pshetlach. The truth of the matter is that, one in learning, one has to be honest. And why do we differentiate between Bishut and Savri remains an open question. Because after all, the truth of the matter is, if we want to call people's attention to a bracha, why isn't Savri enough? Why isn't Bishut enough? And it's an open question. But what I showed you in class last week is halachically more sound than the pshetlach I was told after class. But it doesn't matter whether what I said is correct, and it's not what I said, I was quoting sources, and whether what you said adds to it or subtracts, doesn't matter. The important thing is, does the Masada Kedushin say Bishut? Does he say Savri? It's a very fascinating question. But one thing is for certain. Nowadays, if you listen carefully, most Masada Kedushin don't say Bishut, don't say Savri. What they want to do, and I do it too, I have to say that I do it too, it's frumkeit, you remind a couple to be able to say the bracha. I'll tell you why you remind a couple. I mean, I didn't say this last week, and at Dawn upon me, I missed a little link here. Not important halachically, but just important from halacha lemaisa standpoint. Why do you remind a couple? Why do people say, have kavanah to be able to say the bracha? Say bishut, say savri, without all the lumdis, whether you have to or don't have to. I'll tell you why, it's very simple. Generally speaking, under the chuppah, it's a very unique situation. It's basically the first time in your life someone else has made a bori priya gafen for you, and you're going to drink from the cup. Yes, for the male, it's the first time since his brit. But with all due respect to the new generation of YU students, I don't know if you're better than we are or worse than we are, we'll talk about that next week, too, time permitting, but no one here remembers his brit. Don't give me a story that you remember your brit, Moshe. Please. No one here remembers his brit. So from the time of your brit, think for a moment. Yes, Dov. Yes, Dov. Well, Kiddush every Shabbos in the house, there are many people have a minute that all the males make. You could say if you make Kiddush every Shabbos in the house, then of course, but many people have a minute that all the males make. I agree, by the way, you should know that I'm opposed to the... I'm not opposed. If someone would ask me, only... No, anyone from a Hasidish home, everyone makes Kiddush. It goes without saying. And anyone from an American Baal Tshuva home, they also make Kiddush. Only the Litvakin and the Lamdanin, one people makes to be Motzi everybody. And there are reasons why. Again, you understand the Lamdas here right away. I once discussed this with the Rav, that in order for you to hear Kiddush and not be Yotzei, You have to be a London Mufa. You have to stand there with Kavanah al Menat Kain. I'm not being Yodse, even though I'm hearing it. You have to be a London Mufa. You have to know what you're doing. So, and I've taken a scene in Hasidisha homes. It's unbelievable. They have five boys. Every boy makes Kiddush. You can die from hunger while they're making Kiddush. The only thing is the Hasidim are eating all day. They always find a head that they can eat before davening, after davening, during davening, on davening, under davening. So they always have a way out. But we Litvakin, you can die from hunger while it's going on. But see, under the chuppah, it's a unique situation. Also, people are very emotional. I would like to believe this. We have a young couple here. I would like to believe that I'm telling the truth. You know, in our world, Abby and God, you don't know what goes on anymore. But when I got married, I also was floating in the air. So the Rav wants to remind you, Masada Kedushin, have Kavanah to be Yotzei. That's why they say it. It's not because of the Savri and the Bishrut. And if you would say Savri, the young couple today, it would be meaningless. Because, you know, you're caught in a world where it becomes a format. So, but the idea behind it is what I told you, the centrality of permission, that a rabbi cannot act on his own. We want to close in on the Siddur Kedushin. I go back to what I said to you a year ago already. Minig Yisrael made it possible for Kesef Kedushin, although we took the weakest form of Kedushin, but Minig Yisrael made it possible for the Minhag to succeed and to make it authoritative. And this is the centrality of the rabbi. Now, and this is the Nachlat Shivan. It's a very fascinating Nachlat Shivan. In general, the Nachlat Shivan is a fascinating sefer with all the neschot, and you're going to use it as Rabbanim again. Who knows, the world we're living in, everything will be in English, and in a 10 years' time, you'll have an art scroll where there'll already be Matarek Tuvr in English, and every type of Tuvr in the English forms. I mean, it's frightening. But in the world that I came from, the Nachlat Shivan was what we say in Rabbinic Hebrew, from the Nichzei Tzom Basel of a Rav. You couldn't be a Rav without a Nachlat Shiva. And I can still remember Yitzchak Slodowski. There's a Rabbi Slodowski. He's a very fine rabbi in Queens, if you've heard the name. I can still remember Rabbi Slodowski, and one of his visits to Israel was living, this goes back in the early 70s, he was looking all over for Nachlat Shiva. He had an abridged version. There is a Kitza Nachlat Shiva. And I remember when he finally found it, he was so happy. He had an unabridged Nachlat Shiva. I happen to have an unabridged Nachlat Shiva from an early printing. I have one from the 1950s. So I have an unabridged, and I think I had the abridged too, but I believe I gave it away, because once you have the unabridged, you don't need the abridged version. Then I showed you of the Knesset Yecheskel, of the Yecheskel Katznellenbogen, which is the Katznellenbogen family. And again, it was a very fascinating problem where this girl says she's pregnant to this man. The man denies it. He has to take an oath. While he's playing games, he goes and marries somebody else. And the Rav, who was Masada Kedushin, had no permission. And here you see the Knesset Yecheskel whip him and beat him and teach this rabbi a lesson. How dare he do it? And this, of course, is an overture to many of our problems in the modern world. Once we lose corporal authority, once we lose that ability to give punishments, police jurisdiction, if I may quote from Napoleon's famous questions, then everyone can do what he wants. And this is our tragedy. Here you see it, Bezer Ampin. In the United States, you saw it, Begadol. We still see it, the Hechsherim in America. How do you know what's kosher? How do you know what's not? Outside of the Yohu and the Chafkei, and even the Chafkei, it always frightens me that a Hechsher is a private industry. The greatness of the Yohu is that it's a public trust. It doesn't mean they didn't have problems. Whenever you give a Hechsher in your own kitchen, I always teach my students, I always try with younger people to tell them there's nothing to be ashamed of if you make a mistake in the kitchen. You know, some people think if they make a mistake and they have a shayla, like they're sinning. What are you sinning? The whole purpose of asking a shayla, of having a shayla, what does it show you? It shows you, Jeremy, that you're makpid in kashrut. Where there's no kashrut, there are no shaylas. There's nothing to be ashamed of. So when you give the OU, it may be, I mean, there's always the legendary story of the one can of hind beans, you know, with the pork in it that got an OU by mistake. I don't know if it ever happened. Every decade there's another legend. But there are real stories, for instance, where there was a wrong labeling, something had an OU, it should have been OUD, the D wasn't put on. I had that myself with cake mixes years ago. Someone brought me a cake mix from America, and of course I took for granted a cake mix is parva. Who would ever dream that a cake mix is milchix? And then I found out the cake mix was milchix. So I happened to be friendly with the czar of the kashrut of the RCA, Manny Holzer. he's a man who devoted his life to kashrut. So he told me that I don't have to kashrut anything because he said the amount of milk involved was batul b'shishim. So, but there is, I think, lactose in there. There is a drop of milk. Today, they mark very carefully O-U-D. That's before they had the O-U-D. They used to be O-U, and you had to look at the book to tell whether it was parvok or dairy. Today, they mark it. They even have another designation, D-E, dairy equipment. It's very fascinating that it's parva, but made on dairy equipment. So the Svadim have no problem. See, the Svadim have luck. Outside of the Bedikat Pnim, the Svadim live a good life. But the Bedikat Pnim undermines them. They have to be millionaires. If you guys weren't brought up in the 90s with the Frumkeit binge, you would dance for joy. You're not a Svadi. Because you could eat any kosher meat. You don't have to eat makput on glatt. But a Svadi has to spend a fortune on glatt. Today it doesn't matter because the Hungarians ruined the Ashkenazim, and today all meat is outside of Israel and America, all meat with a heksher basically is glatt. Because people explain to me it doesn't pay to give the heksher to kosher today. It has to be glatt, otherwise it's not going to sell. The market is not big enough. So this is how a tragedy. There's no focal authority. Anyone can give a heksher. In America, let tablet K's and stars K's and this type of K and that K. I'm forgetting about a plain K. And I get a headache because I don't know anything. I happen to know who tablet K is, and I get a double headache from that heksher. Yes, though. Oh, no. In Israel, is the only... No. Dov, relax. In Israel... I don't want to say it's much worse than America, but in England there are plenty of problems. They now have two groups, one heksher undermining another. It's mind-boggling. Israel is better in this respect. Rabbinically, with divorce and marriage, there is fairly good control here. So at least with everything we're talking about here, no one can be Masada Kedushin without permission from the Moetzah Hadatid of the city. I gave an example in America. What undermines us in America, it goes without saying that anyone can perform a wedding, no one can interfere. You're talking about Israel? Israel, I would imagine the kashrut here may be slightly better than America. Here the problem is that every municipality gives its own heksher. So it varies. You do Shalim Rabinet, I know the people involved. If you can't trust them, forget it. Throw the key away. The Yerushalayim people involved are excellent. They have power. They conduct themselves with dignity. They take no back talk. I happen to know owners of Frum people. There was a big scandal now with a hotel here in Beit HaKayim. The owner is my neighbor. He's a Shomer Shabbos, 1,000%. He didn't like the Mashgiach. They took away the Heksha. He spoke freshly to the Mashgiach. He had to come crawling on all four to get back his Heksha. And believe me, the hotel is kosher and Mahajan. The Ravner here has Stolzkeit and has standards. The big problems here are cities like Eilat. Eilat is scandalous. There's a chief rabbi there who's been there for years, for decades. I don't want to mention his name, called Hashem Hastadava, and the guy was giving Sheirim without Shabbat. Their hotels in Eilat. Here's a treif kitchen. Here's a kosher kitchen, 2 feet away from each other. This one had a stall already in America in the 1930s that put you into jail for giving a heksha where part of the factory's kosher potter's trek. Now what happened in Eilat is a miracle. B'nai Torah have moved to Eilat, a few more. There's a Mekas Rav Kolel, and they started to yell out. And now there's been exposure of what's gone on with this man, so the chief rabbi has stepped in, and little by little, but you should know, one of the few products I don't buy, I do not buy Yafvata dairy products, because the heksher on it is worthless. It's from Eilat, from this man. He hasn't been in the factory, they say, in 42 years. It's true that on a dairy product, there's not much that can happen, but there's Shabbat involved, there's Pesach involved. It's one of the few heksherim dairy products I do not touch Yafvata. Generally speaking, the rabbinates are good. Tzvat is excellent today. A city like Tel Aviv, again, there's no chief rabbi now, but certainly they had standards there. Haifa supposedly had standards. The best heksher in the country is probably Rehovot. Rehovot is Rabbi Cook, but it's not Rabbi Cook. It's the man in charge of kashrus is Rabbi Rubin. They say Rabbi Rubin, I've heard this from the biggest experts of America, what this man knows, he can take any American chemist and put him in his back pocket. And automatically, whatever Rabbi Rubin says is okay, the OU automatically gives an OU to. And what's also inspiring about Rehovot is they don't allow any second heksherim. Every other product in the country has two heksherim, the local rabbinate and the bedat, or the local rabbinate in Sheret Yisrael, or the local rabbinate in Machzikei Hadat, or the local rabbinate in the Beit Tzedek of Agudat Israel. Everyone has two heksherim. Rehovot, Rav Kook doesn't allow a second heksherim. He says, this is my heksher. I'm the Rav of the city. Take it or leave it. And I admire a man like that. And they say their heksher is outstanding. But generally speaking, it's not like America, where for the sake of argument, a person can come along. I saw it in my own eyes. I don't mention his name. It was my classmate. What he is doing with heksherim, I might as well be dancing a poker in China. But he suddenly, and I see a bakery on 72nd Street. So the bakery tried to be Shomer Shabbat. They tell me it's a bakery. I was once walking by and a woman comes by and she says, Rabbi Rak Kefet, don't even look in the window of that bakery. They were Machalo Shabbat for 40 years. Now they're losing business. Suddenly they've become Shomer Shabbat. I come back a year later, I see the Machalo Shabbat. The only difference is that there's a big thing in the window, a heteriska. They sold the bakery to Bill and Hillary Clinton for the duration of Shabbat. You know, the old heteriska. You know, that went out of that heteriska went out of existence 100 years ago. You understand what I'm saying? The Rav was furious because with heteriska in America, you'll have every business open. And it's not like Europe where you needed panasa desperately, where Jews had their backs against the wall. It's not the 1930s. It's not the Hitler period. It's the United States of America. So the bakery still has the tablet K. And I see a big bunch of writing, and I looked at it. I couldn't imagine, what's this big writing in Hebrew? And I took a look. It's a shtamachira for Shabbos. I don't mean a heterisk. I mean a heterisk in the sense of a shtamachira for Shabbos. Okay, but anyway, that's the centrality. And Rav Katz Nellenbogen's tshuva is only an overture to modern times. In Israel, at least with the rabbinate, as I've told you more than once, when I came in 69, it was unheard of that an American should be Masada Kedushin. The rabbinate here wouldn't tolerate it. Their attitude was that American rabbis don't know anything on my arts. I had to go and talk and learning with Rav Unterman. And Rav Unterman, it's an amazing thing, the chief rabbi of Israel, I had to go and meet him. And he gave me a beautiful letter, which I have until today. He wrote it on the back of his card. And he wrote on the back of his card. And then I went to the local rabbinate with that letter. And, oh, that'll, all right. Then I got on the list of Yerushalayim. And then, once I was Masada Kedushin, once, twice, and I saw that I didn't lose the Chasen Kala, then you can go any place in Israel. And I've been Masada Kedushin in all the big cities, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, and other places. And I would tell them, check with the Jerusalem rabbi. Today, maybe they know my name a little bit, so they don't have to check. But they're very good that way. They are really very good. And I remember once I came in, and without a, you know, again, I look like a guy, and which is my privilege. I'm proud to look the way I look. There's nothing wrong with it. I can defend myself halachically, don't. But I know I look like a sheikh. It's my pushtak. So I remember I came in when Rav Zolti was the chief rabbi. So some idiot locally started to give me a little trouble here. So he tells me he has to go into Rav Zolti. A minute later, he goes into Rav Zolti. Rav Zolti comes in with him and embraces me and hugs me. No time now, why? And the man didn't know what to do. And Rav Zolti went out, called to Rav Rakefet. You know, the guy suddenly, his attitude changed from night to day. But at least there's control. We don't have it outside of Israel. And even in Israel, of course, we have problems. That's our tragedy. We're not united. Now, then we saw when all was said and done that even the Gedolei Ashkenazim, as much as we think the Ashkenazim slammed the door on Hafkat Kedushin, but even that flaw remained with a bit of a problem. Yeah, maybe we can do it, but still we didn't do it. And that's the way it hung fire in the Ashkenazic world. Now, I want to move back to the Sephardic world. And the Sephardic world improved and improved the Takanot. We talk about Saloniki, we go back to Saloniki, we go back to the 1500s and the 1600s, and they introduced Tavkad Kedushin, and they introduced Pisular Adam. Although, Halacha L'maisa, they were always frightened to be Mafkir Kedushin. And we have to be honest, this is the heart of Yiddishkeit, this is Mamzeret, this is Haguna. It is something very frightening. And you have to have, again, if I may quote myself, it's not a Shailer and Yantav Sheni. A Shailer and Yantav Sheni, no matter what you're paskin, you can't be right and you can't be wrong. Let's be honest, there's no one who is totally right. Even if you take on all the chumras for Heschel Shech, the paskin's 2 full days, and then he puts on tefillin in secret. No, Ribbono Shel Olam, if you're observing 2 full days, how do you put on tefillin secretly? And if you paskin 1 day and you don't do malacha, so of course you come out with a very awkward situation that a person is davening chol, doing everything chol, in the meantime he spends the whole day reading a novel. If he would spend the day learning, I would be proud. But you know what happens? We wind up wasting the day reading, and we're housebound and a terrible feeling, and you look out your window and everyone's riding in their cars with guys with beards and payas and strimals, and you're sitting upstairs and you're not budging. and then you get a heter from Rakefet, someone else can pay the fare for you on the bus. No, I give that's true. It's true. I know what I'm saying. I have Yesha. Rav Moshe says one thing. The Rav told me another thing. The Rav is, to me, appears right because the Rav's lundus is irrefutable. So then, what kind of yontif sheni is it if you're getting on a bus and someone's paying for you? All right, Mela, if you're going to the kotel on the bus, it's one thing. But if you're going to visit your girlfriend, it's a different. So again, you can't be right. You can't be wrong with yontif sheni. But halakha l'maisa here, everyone is frightened. Now, this is why, in theory, Havkat Kedushin is beautiful, magnificent. Halakha l'maisa, who has the guts, who has the nerve? How can you be mata eshet ishul alma? I mean, again, a Rav has to have Yirat Shemayim. If you don't have Yirat Shemayim, then you might as well ask Professor Albright to pass in the Shaila. Do anyone know who Professor Albright was? Professor Albright was professor of Judaic studies at John Hopkins University. Zechus Tadikal Drachi was a chassid umat olam. The man knew how to learn a daf gemara backwards and forwards. And he was an Oy of Yisrael, and he published, and the man's scholarship is fantastic. But you wouldn't ask him to pasuk in a shayla. A shayla person has to have Yirat Shemayim, and that a guy cannot have. He can be an Oy of Yisrael, he can be a Talmud Chacham, I'll give him, grant him everything. But Yirat Shemayim he can't have. That's something only a Jew can have, who understands the nuance of 1 minute before Shabbos and 1 minute after Shabbos. So, people are frightened. Now, what did they get in Saloniki? This is very fascinating. In 1742, they added one more requirement. Sheyiyu hakedushin b'mamad aviyah chatan v'akala v'yim lo yiyelahem av hayotek krovim aleihem. Fascinating. They went and added to the original takana of the Rashtam. I'll give you a source in a minute. They went and added that not only the old, look what's happened since the Mishnah. You began with a simple Mishnah. Ha'isha niknesh b'shtosh d'rachim, b'keser b'shtav v'biyah. You began with a simple Mishnah. So look what they added. You needed a minyan, and you did the chuppah v'kedushin together, and the Turkish Jews, believe me, anyone named Khalifa has a lot to be proud of, because they added one takana after another. And here is Havkot Kedushin Pisaleidim. A Rav, more than that, you must have the father of the Chatan and the father of the Kalah present. What does this mean? Obviously, if you have the father of the Chatan and the father of the Kala, it means, Chaim, that you have parental acquiescence. It's not being done a shotgun wedding. However, there's only one simple problem. Rabbi Belkin used to say, this was one of Dr. Belkin's beautiful vedlach, he used to say, nobody has a mortgage on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is very true. No one has a mortgage on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at us sitting here. No one knows where we're going to be 10 years from now. All of us understand what life is about. No, what do you do if a chatan kala don't have a father? What do you do? So the takana says, krovim aleihem, someone who is the closest relative you have. All right? The closest relative you have? What happens when the father is dead? And look at the scenario. You're about to get married. Your mother is very happy. Your mother gives permission. Let's say it's the Kala. The mother of the Kala gives permission. And the brothers of the Kala are screaming and shouting no. And each one can give their reasons. I can understand it very clearly. A mother can be saying, I have a daughter. In those days, remember, a woman found it hard to get support. She had to marry to have support. This is why there was a lot less divorce 40 and 50 years ago than there is today. Because nowadays, a woman financially is independent. And this is a sociological fact. You can't dismiss it with all the problems we have. And I can tell you, you have no idea. My daughter opened up, inadvertently, my daughter opened up. It's fascinating what happened. I say this in relation to this course. It fits right in. My daughter took my classes. My eldest daughter taught my classes for 1 week because I lost 1 week of teaching there. So my daughter went in and she taught about... In the Beit Din here, they're now going to introduce a prenuptial agreement based upon the RCA agreement of America, based upon Rabbi Willick's agreement, which the RCA accepted. It's a long mass of a matan, and the Beit Din here made certain improvements and modified it to the Israeli scene. So she taught the girls this prenuptial agreement. While she was teaching it, somehow she mentioned about a divorced couple that they're not allowed to be under one roof together. They're very makpid in Israel. They always want the couple once they're divorced. And of course, it's an open Mishnah. Halan b'pungdaki, right? The Mishnah in Gittin. What is it? Pei Aleph, Pei Bet. It's a whole sugya there. Then Pei Chet, Pei Tet. It's a whole sugya. Why aren't they allowed to be under the roof? Because chas v'chalila, if they're remarried again, we say chazakah, once there's yichud between a man and woman who were once husband and wife, where chayshish that he lived with her again, they're old friends, they knew each other intimately, knew, for the sake of old times, okay, it's only human nature. How many Hollywood movies have played on this theme? But halachically, they're married again. Nu, what does the Gemara say? Ein adam aseh bilato bilatznut. My daughter happened to mention this in passing, that in the rabbinate they always warned them when the get is given, they shouldn't be mitjachet again. So a girl came over to me and said, you have no idea how many girls are frightened with what your daughter said. I said, what are you talking about? She said, Rabbi, I hope she's exaggerating, said to me, half the class is from divorced homes. And he says, my parents, of course they use. My parents see each other, they have a cup of coffee together. When they pick up the kids, they take the kids to have a cup of coffee. All right. I told her, without yichud, but I'm very frightened, because who says there's no yichud? You understand, the man comes into the house, the woman is in the house, the kids are at a neighbor, till the kids comes in. I told her, you know, it's a frightening thing to me. The Israeli rabbinate is absolutely right. You get divorced, please walk on the other sides of the street. If you have to meet in some cafe in the middle of town where 100 people are sitting around. You understand what I'm saying? But look at what the girl said to me. She said, now I hope she's exaggerating. She said to me, 50% of the class divorced. Who heard of this 100 years ago? Who heard of it 50? 40? There was an article in the Stern College Observer, which I'll quote in one of my lectures. Those of you that listen to the tapes will hear it. This girl says 52% get divorced of Stern College. I can't believe that percent. That's what I said. I can't believe it. But halavai, I saw the article. But if it's not 52, so let's say, one second, let's say that David, it's 25%, you understand? It's frightening. But the difference is, the mother says, the girl needs support. Thank God she's getting married. On the other hand, the brothers know the good boy, know the man. They went to yeshiva with him. They went to school with him. They're in business with him. The guy is a cheat. The guy double talks. The guy lies. So the brothers are yelling, no, don't let her marry. This guy is no good. He'll beat her. He won't be kind to her. He's self-centered. He's haughty. You follow me? All the problems that you can come up with. And the mother's yelling, let her marry, let her marry. Who do you listen to? And this Shaila came up, halacha lemaisa. You see, it's Torah response to literature. It's a reflection of life. And this scenario, you don't have to be a Hollywood scriptwriter. By the way, many of the Hollywood scriptwriters are yeshiva graduates, you should know. From my time already, graduates of MTA, couldn't believe it. Over the years, I always see the names in every mystery and murder and whatnot. MTA graduates, it's distance from Yiddishkeit, it's some from the moon right now, but nevertheless, MTA graduates. You don't have to be a Hollywood scriptwriter to come up with this scenario. And here it is. Here's the source. The Avnei Ha'efod. L'Reb David Pipani. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. Pei Yud Pei Aleph Nun Vav. Chelik Aleph. And I'm quoting from Daf Nun Omer Aleph. And he was Rav in Saloniki. And in Daf Nun. And in this Daf I'm quoting, here it is. He brings down from the Rashtam, and he brings down all the previous Haramim. And then he says, and now we've added on Shabbos Kodesh, Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and it's the year I mentioned a moment ago in 1742. He said, when we would read the Skerim in the synagogue, remember the minig was in Saloniki, that every year, once a year, they read the Skerim. And he said, when we read the Skerim on the annual time of Shabbos Kodesh, Rosh Chodesh Shvat, we added Balsafa Sheyu Hakadushin Bamaimara Via Khatanva Kala Vimlo Yalahem of Hayote Krovim Alehem. And then the story comes up. Maasek, he continues, Masa Bolayadai, and he describes the story and this
man and woman want to get married, the girl is the Yatoma. And they send for the brothers, do you give permission? Will you take your sister to chuppah? And the brothers answer, absolutely not. The guy is a lowlife, the guy is a bum, the guy is a noisaf, the guy is a trumpenik, the brothers are adamant. We will not take our sister to chuppah. We don't approve. Sent for the mother, and the mother says, absolutely, she will take the girl to chuppah Hillel. She will walk her daughter to chuppah. So now this is the question. Who is Hayotek Harov? And it's, by the way, I want to tell you something. Biologically speaking, there's no question the mother is closer than the brothers. I mean, right or wrong, logically, biologically. But see, from a different point of view, the brothers may be closer. I'll tell you why. Can anyone tell me why? Why is there a shaila here? Why is there a question here? Can anyone tell me why? Just go one drop deeper. The brothers are closer to the scene. The mother's one generation removed. The brothers are living in her world. The brothers may very well know the boy. The mother may have an axe to grind. She's anxious to see her daughter married. What do Chazal say? Tav lemeitav tu me lemeitav almala. And all of you know how much has been said about this chazaka. Someday we'll talk about it, even in this class with the Rav and Rabbi Rachman, what went on over this chazaka. But I'll tell you something. Just as a woman might say it, certainly a mother says it. A mother, I don't want to overemphasize, but a mother is anxious to see her daughter married. I don't want to say desperate, I want to say anxious. A mother is anxious to see. You guys have big smiles on your face, you see? You got it, Baruch Hashem. Remind me next week to tell you my pshat, Vohuyim Shel Bach, and why my picture is now going on the wall in certain homes in Gedolei Yisrael. I saved the OU from denigration. You have no idea what's going on. It was such an eye-opener. I never enjoyed a trip more. Whenever I go to America, Jack will tell you, Eidat Nemana, I don't go happily. I suffer there. I can't wait to get back. I couldn't wait to get back this time either. But did I learn a great deal? Was it an eye-opener? Wow! And what everyone thought would be the explosion turned out to be a little firecracker. And what I never dreamt would be an explosion. Wow, that was a full-scale storm. Nothing about... Please, I want to be sure you come to class next Sunday. What do you want out of me? Dove, I want to be sure you come to class next Sunday. Now, back here. So you see, why should the brothers be closer? Because maybe the brothers are right. What did Chazal say? When you're about to marry a woman, if you have a shidduch going, after what did Chazal say? Look at her brothers. Chazal knew just what they were saying. Look at her brothers. So this is the suffix. You see, don't dismiss it so lightly. Zev is sitting there thinking, why should there be a shaylik here? Yes, the mother may be biologically much closer. It's a mother. Come on, you can't compare brothers to a mother. But nevertheless, the brothers are living in your world, they're your age, they're in your range, they know the man, they know the boy, they can check out on him, and maybe they know something the mother wants to overlook in her anxiety to see her daughter married. Anyway, it's very fascinating. This is the question, and he explains it, and he says, who do you call? Who do you call the Yotek Rava? And he says, Halacha Lamaisa, we have to go with the mother. And he says, and he explains why. And it comes back to an old problem that I introduced last year, and we spoke about it this year. Darshan Lashon Bnei Adam, the whole Gemara Bav Metzia with Hillel Hazakein. But what it means is very simple. In common language, who's the closest relative? It's your mother. And if the Chachamim made a takana hayoter krovim, then the mother has to come ahead of the brothers. And with all due respect to the brothers, and they know the situation, they know the generation, and they have insight, they know the men, and they were classmates. I remember Rabbi Avram Shapiro when he was chief rabbi, so he wanted to meet me. It doesn't matter why now. But he went, so I'll never forget, I came in to talk with them, and he's very, I have to say, they're a very insightful individual. And he says to me, look, he says, I went to Mecca as a rabbi. He says, oh, and he mentioned a whole slew of names to me, of famous rabbanim, some of them Mizrachim, Mizrachistim, some of them not anymore. He says, they were my chaverim. And I can tell you who learned and who didn't learn. And I was, you know, it's absolutely right. I know my classmates. I can tell you the real stories, the honest stories of what YU was like in the 50s. And of course, everyone became world famous from that group of people. But I knew them when. So it's true, the brothers can say we knew, but it goes, Darshan, Lashan, B'nai Adam, the mother's a mother, she's the closest, and if she approves, with all our problems, nothing in life is guaranteed. My dear friends, you have no guarantees in life. The only guarantee you have, of course, is that once you're born, you're going to die. Outside of that, even taxes, Baruch Hashem, Jews have thought up good ways. As you know, there are many nice Jews sitting in jail today for coming up with magnificent schemes to avoid payment of taxes. So I don't want to crack the old joke, nothing is as sure. But that we still haven't figured a way. If we could figure out a way to avoid that, then we're back in Gan Eden, then I'll really believe in the powers of man. But right now, man is limited, God is all powerful, death is death, so there's no guarantee in life. And the truth of the matter is that even if the brothers have their qualms and their hesitations and diffidence, we go with the mother, the girl can get married. And that's an amazing source from Saloniki. And now we come to our own world, the Sfadim in Yerushalayim. We come to one of the most fascinating documents that I can ever tell you about. What I lack is color Xeroxing, because every Sefer I quote, as you probably know, I looked it up, I checked it out, I Xeroxed it. This Sefer, actually, what I'm about to tell you, the first page is painted red out of honor covered. In my Xerox, it doesn't show up. But I'll never forget the original. Mamish, red dye on a Sefer published 150 years ago. David, what's your problem if I roll further? We're coming now to Eretz Yisrael. Now, look what happened. Excuse me? Yeah, I can get the color Xerox, but this Sefer I only get out of the Hebrew University Library with Protexia Shepherd Protexia. You understand? The chances of finding this Sefer in the States are as good as my finding a kosher pizza in communist China today in some small province. Now, gentlemen, we now come to the Supreme Court of Israel and a decision they rendered a few weeks ago. What, anyone know what I'm talking about? I'll give you a hint, the Rishon Letzion, the Chacham Bashi, or you only live in Israel, but you don't know what's going on. Gentlemen, the Supreme Court of Israel, Rav Ovadia Yosef, I just this morning Xeroxed, I have new tshuvot of his in relation to a certain case that happened with a Talmud of mine and a Kohen and a Grusha, and I'm going to go through these tshuvot later this week. But I just Xeroxed it because the print is so small, it's handwriting, I blew it up nice and large, and I'll go through it be'iyun. Now, on his stationery it reads, Ovadia Yosef, Rishon Letzion. No, can anyone tell me what the problem is? People went to court that Rav Ovadia Yosef has no right to use the title Rishon Letzion. He's no longer in office. It's already 12 years that Rav Ovadia is not in office. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court in the State of Israel. An interesting question. Do you have a right to say Rishon Letzion? If it would say Rishon Letzion L'She'avah, then you can't have an argument. The minig in America is, believe me, if I were to meet Reagan, which is unlikely now due to his illness, I would say President Reagan, right? We always give a former president that kavod, President Clinton. I mean, it's no doubt in my mind, in 2 years he'll be a former president, but you'll always give him that, no, there's a conservative reaction in America. But and Clinton happens to be, as far as I'm concerned, he's an ethical boor, a degenerate in his behavior, but he's a nice guy, and he's really an Ohev Yisrael. He represents the generation. This is the generation. Pnei Hador, Pnei HaKelev. They reflect each other. A generation gets the leadership it deserves. But he's a nice guy, Clinton. He really is a nice guy. And we Jews can't have any pain against him, because he doesn't want any harm for Israel. His plans for Israel, exactly Peres' plans and Rabin's plans, he takes the lead from them. But as far as I can see, he's mamish, annoyed Israel, there's no anti-Semitism, neither was there with Reagan. Reagan, anyone from Hollywood who made it in Hollywood had to be a philo-Semite. Yes, yes, though. Right. So, No, beside. So a president in a stationery, you would give him the cover. You call him president. Yeah, yes, Naftali. Yeah, gentlemen, don't convince me with everything you're saying, and I know what's going on here. And Ribbono Shel Olam is giving me an open Gemara in Shabbos with who I see Naftali's dashing on Neirot Chanukah now. Naftali, they were out to get Rav Avadja, and it didn't say Lisha Avah. So they, and his stationery reads, Rishon Letzion. The Supreme Court Paskin, very interestingly, he's allowed to use that title. And they explained the original title. You see, originally, the majority of the Jews living here in the 18th century were Svardim. These Svardim laid the foundation for the modern community. And they were Svardim. And not only that, who were the masters of the country? The Muslims. The Muslims could relate to a Sephardic Jew. They could not relate to an Ashkenazi. We are alien, you understand. A Sephardic Jew shares in common with the Muslims a certain amount of culture, background. They lived together for so many centuries. The Ashkenazic Jew was alien to them. So they developed the concept that if they're going to be Jews here, there has to be a chief rabbi. They gave the chief rabbi the title Chacham Bashi. Now, Chacham Bashi means, what is this, Turkish Naftali? This is Turkish, that's what I was told, that it means chief rabbi. Translated into Hebrew, Chacham Bashi means Chacham Rashi, the chief sage. And that was his title. And then they added to the title, as time moved on, Rishon Letzion. And beginning, and this is the first name, beginning with Reb Chaim Avraham Gagin, and he spelt his name Gimel Aleph, Gimel Yud Nun. And I'll give you his year so you can place it. 1787, 1848, 1787, 1848, beginning with Reb Chaim Avraham Gagin, until today. This is the formal title of the Sephardic Chief Rabbi. The Ashkenazic Chief Rabbi is just called the Rav HaRashi. The Sephardic Chief Rabbi, Chacham Bashi, Rishon Letzion, and Rosh Rabbanei Yisrael, add as many titles as you want. This title was given to him by the Muslims who empowered him and gave him great power. Now, the Supreme Court ruled that once you get this title, traditionally among the Svardim, like Naftali says, Malin Bakodesh, V'yein Moridin, or the simple example I give you, I don't want to overstate Naftali, the Supreme Court here, big Lamdanim, they're not. Big Tzaddikim, they're not. At times, they are fools, you understand? They're homosexuals, if they can rule that that's a couple, you might as well destroy the Jewish people, prepare a few million graves, because AIDS will destroy us all. It is ravishing. You're living here now. You haven't looked at the New York Times lately. There was the day that went by that I was in the state that some guy in his 30s, cause of death, complications of AIDS. Survived by his roommate, his soulmate, his partner, his husband, the chvesvas. Two men are married. It's unbelievable. So if the Supreme Court had any brains, they might have thought a little differently. But I know. I read it. And I bought Yom HaShish. I treated myself. I was walking Borough Park last week. So for $2.25, I read all the Lashon Hara there. I got it all there, denying it, this and that. Alts can threaten. Everything can happen. Believe me. I'm no fool. Jews, Judaism is perfect. Jews are not. Learn those six words and you'll survive as a Jew. If you don't know those six words, you'll be washed away by the torrential floods. Gentlemen, the Supreme Court, nevertheless, it is a precedent in secular world. Once President of the United States, he's always called Mr. President. That's a certain cover they give, and that's what they ruled, and I think they're absolutely right. And as much as I have against Rav Ovadia Yosef, and I have a great deal against him, and I'll say that next Sunday, loud and clear, but believe me, he can use the title Rishon Letzion from today for the next million years. God should give him life, and he should be Chozer B'tshuva. But God should give him life. And I have nothing against his using the title Rishon Letzion. Gentlemen, Now, where does this fit in here? And here we come to an amazing document. Here it is. This was in gold and red. I don't know, in rabbinic literature. This is the name of the Sultan, and this is his empowerment. And this is the document of all the power the Ottoman Empire gave to this Chacham Bashi, the first Chacham Bashi in modern times, Reb Chaim Avraham Gagin. Now, it appears this document was published in Yerushalayim. The editor of Yerushalayim, again, these are very famous names. The editor was Avraham Moshe Luntz. And this, what I'm quoting to you, was published in 1892. It's a historic document in Chelik Dalid of Yerushalayim. And the document begins on page 203. So that you can find it, you can find the volume, you can find it in Luntz, Chelik Dalet, beginning on page 203. It's a document going back to the early part of the 19th century, the empowerment of the Sephardic chief rabbi and what his powers are. Now, you know what's amazing about this document? You'll see in a minute, I'll quote from it. But it's unreal, because you already see that the Ottoman Empire was sensitive to the needs of the rabbi. What, those of you that come from rabbinical homes, tell me, what is a rabbi's biggest problem? This is the tragic, the quasi-tragic existence of a rabbi. A rabbi, no. A rabbi, on one hand, represents the community in Torah. On the other hand, he's subject to his balabatim. And every rabbi, I don't care who you are, there's a parameter beyond which you cannot go. This is why I am a dangerous species when I speak in America. Why? Because no one has a mortgage on me. But when your father's a rabbi, you're limited, you're fenced in. This is the nature of the rabbinate. I see it when I was in the rabbinate. I see it with my students. I see the pressure on them. I see, to give you a simple example, right now, Mr. Shapiro, Reuven Spolta, Jonathan Crow, Benjamin Krauss, Savitskowitz, Shalom Erbaum, Hillel Lev Tzion, Naftali Chaliva, Chaim Chagla. Excuse me? Hillel. Be humble for another few years. You went to Lev Tzion. It's good enough. Moshe Sandusky, Ezra Shapiro, Akiva Sachnowitz. Ezra, where is Akiva Sachnowitz? What does he have? Oy vey. A mock and present. Tell him I gave him a gift. I feel for his heartache. Yair Yaish. Who's in touch with him? God, do you talk with him at all? You don't see him at the Supreme Court? Pardon me, I got confused. God and Dove, Jeremy, and everybody's here. Gentlemen, where was I a minute ago? I was so this rabbi moved to suburbia, and he went to a big... I heard this, I cried for him. And he spoke there the way he spoke in Kew Garden Hills against the government and Ramat HaGolan. And there, half the Balabatma already are out to kill him. How dare you talk against Rabin? And you understand? And Nebuchadnezzar, you're fenced in. If you're fenced in on your political views, you're also fenced in halachically. You know, excuse me? You want to figure out who? You figured out who? What's the big deal? I feel for him. He's a dear Talmud of mine. And I heard, you know, blah, blah, and I couldn't believe it. Here I hear this guy offered 100 thou, and half his congregation came out with a signed ad against him. A signed ad against Shvil HaZahav. Nebuch, these Rabbanim, I'll tell you the truth, Mali Letzarazu, you got enough problems, Paskining Shilas, what the heck are you getting involved in political issues that basically have nothing to do with you? Just simply let the Balabatan decide, present two sides of the coin, and let Rakefet say what he wants to say. I can take the heat, you're there, I come in and hit and run, I'm there and gone, I can take the heat, but you're there to suffer the consequences of your statements. Anyway,
You know what's amazing? This document, which is both halachic and social, you can see that the Ottoman Empire was aware of the fact that lay people are constantly putting pressure on the rabbis. And time and again, the document says, it just blows your mind. No one is allowed to put pressure on the rabbi. No one is allowed to force him to do something he doesn't want to do. And kol hakavod to this document and this empowerment from Abd al-Majid ben Mahmud. Now, well, listen, we're talking now, but now, and what does he give him power? Dove, from here to modern times, we have 200 years, but what does he give him power? Number one, listen to this. The Chacham Bashi, no one but no one is allowed to be Masada Kedushin without his permission. This is the start of modern day Israel. These laws, God can trace it out, carry over in the Knesset until today. No one can force him to do a Kedushin that is forbidden by his religion. In other words, Mahmud is not a Jew. But he says on the Chacham Bashi, he cannot be forced to do anything against his religion. And it says, V'echad me'adat ha'yehudim, asher yetzeh lakachat isha, o legaresh isha, o lakachat isha lishto. And if you want to get married, you want to get divorced, you want to take a second wife, you cannot do anything. B'li'di shayon ha'chacham ha'niskai. I love the modern Hebrew. Rishayon already is modern Hebrew. We, in old Hebrew, would say rishut. Rishayon means you need a license. Not only that, vanashim, I can't believe these words. It's like Dov wrote this, because Dov comes from a rabbinic family. You'll appreciate this. I remember from the rabbi, vanashim hatifim. Those are the vulgar balabatim, the balabatim that made money. You understand, they're people that made money. They believe the world owes them a favor. They are arrogant, you understand? And some of you will have to put up with it. Baruch Hashem, as I say, I have been redeemed, and I was redeemed at a fairly early stage in life. I've not told a lie since the age of 47. God was kind to me. I had 47 bad years, now I'm going to have 47 good years, Be'ezrat Hashem. But this is, I can't believe these words. This is a document 150 years ago. And the Anashim HaTkifim, Lo yachrichu et hachachamim lomar ha'sir yisha lahazot l'isha hazeh neged hadat. It's spelled out. The rough guys, the vulgar balabatim, the coarse amayorets, they have no right to tell the Chacham Bashi, you let this man marry a second wife when he doesn't want to permit it. Beautiful. This is in Israel, the power, the Chacham Bashi. Now, listen to this. I just want to go in to the rest of the document simply historically, because this put all power in the state of Israel, Jonathan, in the hands of the rabbinic. This document is the basis for what develops with the Chacham Bashi. Someday, if I'll have time, I'll explain to you how this is the empowerment for the chief rabbinic. It's based upon a continuation of the status quo in 1921, and this becomes the empowerment for what happens with Ben-Gurion when he puts Chuppah v'Kedushin, or Kedushin and Gerushin, in the hands of the rabbinate, and until today, in the state of Israel, until today. If I'll have time next week, I'll explain to you we're sitting on top of a time bomb. But until today, it's in the hands of the chief rabbinate. Goes back to this document. But I'll tell you what else is fascinating about this document. Yes, Reuven. That the Supreme Court can interfere with. I was asked if the Supreme Court ruling on homosexuality can affect the chief rabbinate. No, because the chief rabbinate only has to pass from the Fidei Dinei Torah. And the Supreme Court decides in accordance with general legal practice. God can explain that to you. It's not just Torah law. They may consider Torah law, but that's only one. They can take Western law, they can take Roman law, they can take English law, they can take common law. There is not a constitution to the state of Israel. So it's the general acceptance of the various legal systems, and then they decide what they want. You understand? But here they came to feel the rabbinate, at least not the way it's structured right now, because the rabbinate is only responsible to Din Torah. So that can't interfere with the rabbinate, the way it's structured at this moment. You know what's amazing here? The document goes on. Gentlemen, what used to be the one threatening device that the rabbinate had until modern times. No, who can tell me the famous story of Reb Chaim that the Rebbe brings down in Ish Halacha that Aaron Rakefet will bring down in his book Be'ezrat Hashem on the Rav? An amazing story with Mila. Mila. Writing a book on the Rav. I've been working on the book for years and years and years as a result of the Kollel. It has to do with three lectures I gave him. The boys asked me, that's finished already. That's handed in. I go, oh, please. It's ancient history already. Baruch Hashem. They have it in tradition, in the office. Now we have to wait till it comes out. It'll be another 2 years. We can grow a big beard until then, because they're waiting for a Baron has to give an article. Professor Tweski has to give an article. Professor Schatz already gave an article. It's going to be quite an issue, but you have to have all the articles in. Reuven, let's come back to the Ish Halacha. Gentlemen, sometimes I want to get a little upset, but I remind myself I can't. At your age, you should know the Ish Halacha backwards and forwards. How can you breathe without knowing it? Reuven, your air is spoiled. No wonder your name is Spalter. Without knowing the Ish Halacha, you cannot breathe properly. They're teaching you how to shech behemoth, but in the meantime, you're not yet a great human being. In the Ish Halacha, Chaim, the Rav tells the following story. It's a famous story. This was the one power the Rabbanim had. When the Jews stepped out of the Pale of Settlement in Russia. Now you have to understand something. Even until today, there's a machloket among doctors. Is Brit Mila good for you or isn't it good for you? The Western world believes that Brit Mila is healthy. Because when you have the foreskin, bacteria collects underneath. And therefore in the Western world, every child is circumcised as a matter of course. The Eastern world believes that if God wanted you circumcised, He would have created you circumcised. Since God created a man with a foreskin, leave it there. It's healthy. It's good for you. And by the way, medical research contradicts on this topic. You can do a whole doctorate. It's gone back and forth. Right now, by the way, the research shows Brit Mila is not good for you. And that's why you lose 3 points on any army physical in the world. The highest grade you can get in Israel is 97. Because automatically, it's an international standard, you lose 3 points for being circumcised. Now, when the Jews became modern in Eastern Europe, the first thing they did, Dov, listen carefully, they didn't have circumcision. And this became the minhag. You stepped out of the Pale of Settlement, you moved to St. Petersburg, you became matan, and the first thing you did, you didn't have Brit Mila for your children, lo aleinu. The Rabbanim held a meeting in St. Petersburg. This is the early 1900s. This is the winds of socialism, Bolshevikism are beating very strongly, and they decided that any child who doesn't have a Brit Mila will not be buried in the Jewish cemetery. Now this frightened Jews. To be buried among Goyim, you understand? There are no atheists in foxholes. And even an irreligious Jew, when it came to death, wanted to be buried among Jews. No, the Rabbanim were ready to vote in it, and Reb Chaim got up hysterically, and he said, show me the halacha that not being circumcised doesn't allow you to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Chas v'chalila, just because the child is not circumcised, but you cannot deny him Jewish burial. And this was the Rav's development of Reb Chaim, Isha Halacha. Obviously, the other Rabbanim also cared about the halacha, but they had to use a stricture. They wanted to threaten the Jews. I can understand them very well. I have to tell you, if I was there, I would have voted with the other Rabbanim, not with Reb Chaim. But that was Reb Chaim's viewpoint. This is the next paragraph. When it comes to Jewish burial, the Rav should have full power where you bury a Jew. And look what he says. Ubiyot ki al pi adat shelachem lo yitnu hacham likbot hayudim shemetu bezman hitnagdutam ledatam. Lo yechlu anashim pshutim v'atkifim l'achriach v'lekof et hachachamim l'ma lehem aleichem l'kbar et hametim hanitzkarim. It means like a modern document. Someone dies, did something against the rabbinate, married a woman without permission. The rabbinate says, we will not bury you until you are chozer b'tshuva, until you divorce the woman. The guy dies. The anashim hatakifim, those vulgar, coarse balabatim who think when you have money, you own the world, they cannot force the rabbi to bury the Jew against the psak of the Rav. If the Rav says outside the cemetery, he is buried outside the cemetery. You all know that the rabbinate in Israel lost the power with the new government. This new government created by Ovadia Yosef, created by Shas, I have to say it again, I have to say the truth, as much as it hurts, as much as I don't understand it, as much as I haven't slept in 2.5 years, have nightmares at night, this new government decreed it can be secular burial. The rabbinate no longer controls burial. Of course, they halacha l'maisa, they still haven't come up with the money to buy the secular burial ground, so it's the kibbutzim who are burying the goyim who are half-Jews, or half-Jews who are goyim, or Jews who want to be buried among goyim, lo aleinu. But look at the power that the rabbinate had here, Zev. Isn't this amazing? And this is from the Ottoman Empire. Yes, Zev. The rabbi, you'll see in a minute. And then it goes on. Kashrut, what we were talking about before. You can't believe your ears. The aladot ha-machlim ha-mashkim ha-kashem ha-trefan shel huma ha-nishka lo yachol kolish levakesh v'lishol imru ze kasher v'ze trefa. And it's just unbelievable. The rabbi decrees what is kosher, what is treif. No one has any right to question his authority. And don't you dare come along and give your own heksha. What authority here. And then it goes further. Ubizman shechacham nizkar yabol yistambul liraglei asakim. And the chief rabbi has to come to Istanbul, that's Constantinople, the capital of Turkey, to deal with the governmental officials. He appoints a person in his place, and you can't believe it. And no one can find fault or criticize or second guess the person that the rabbi appointed to take care of the community while he is gone. And then it comes to Zev's question. And the taxes, that whatever taxes the rabbi decides to collect, the secular government, that means the Ottoman Empire, approves it. Every Jew has to give these taxes, and the rabbi is the sole authority how the money is dispensed. And it goes on and on describing the power of the rabbanim in taxation, in the clothes they wear, the honors they can give out, and the government stands behind them 1,000,000%. Gentlemen, what a document. And this is the start. And this is Yerushalayim. And this is the Chacham Bashi. And this is the Rishon Letzion. And this document, emblazoned in gold and red, is the start of modern history, of the laws of Chuppah V'Kedushin that ultimately affect everybody in the state of Israel. But we go further. So look what you have now. You have Yerushalayim, you have a community. It's a Sfardic community. The ancient Takanot and the Turkish community, Saloniki, everything that developed in Turkey, had unbelievable influence and power on what happens in Yerushalayim. If I can put it very bluntly, Yerushalayim begins as a sniff of Turkey. The first Jews settle here, the Ottoman Empire, they come from Turkey, the rabbis were trained in Turkey. It's a satellite of Constantinople. And the Takanot from Turkey carry over. You need a minyan, you need a rav, you need the parents present. Chuppah v'kedushin have to be together. It cannot be separated. All these ancient takana carry over. We're going to have a case in a second. 1 second. That's what I'm leading into. And the empowerment is given to the Chacham Bashi. And he rules single-handedly. Now, I have to tell you, this will later become a tremendous problem, because it's true in the world in which we live, and again I'm going to be critical of the world in which you have grown up, when you are focused around one single rabbi, there's a limit what one rabbi can do. And we see We see how we're suffering. I don't have to tell you. You look at the Lubavitcher world today. I'm not a Lubavitcher, but I'm certainly a lover of Lubavitch. And I tell you, I cry. There's so much machloket going on in America. Those of you who know about the elections in Crown Heights, and this is just frightening. Because we've developed a world where there are focal figures, and these focal figures, hundreds of thousands evolve around them. And that's not good. There can be a focal figure, but you have to have, for every 1,000 Jews, you have to have one rabbi with power and authority. You can't have one rabbi for 500,000 Jews. It just doesn't work that way. It can't work that way. History shows us that it doesn't work. And you see with your own eyes. I don't have to talk about Breslov. Look at Lubavitch. It is very frightening. Frightening, because for many Jews, Lubavitch is Torah. It's synonymous with Torah. Gentlemen and young lady, later with the chief rabbinate, do you know why they had to organize the chief rabbi? Because the Chacham Bashi couldn't handle everything himself. It reached the point where the community expanded in Israel, where you had so many Jews, one man couldn't do it all. That's why the chief rabbi was organized. But look what was happening in the 19th century. More and more Jews started coming in. Not only Sfatim, you now have Ashkenazim. What type of Ashkenazim? You all know the Talmidei HaGra. Gra was very motivated by Eretz Yisrael. It became practical. He spoke in terms of revival. Those of you familiar with the Tkufa HaGadola, with the Kol HaTar, his Talmidim, many of the leading Talmidim came in Aliyah. I don't have to go further than the Rivlin family. The truth of the matter is that in Yerushalayim, in the Ashkenazi community, every second Jew is a descendant of Rivlin. And that family, from Menachem Parish all the way to famous actresses and actors, Sefi Rivlin, what's her name, Michaeli, whatever, what's her first name? Anyone know the famous actress, TV? They're all descendants of the Talmidei HaGra, the Rivlin clan, the Rivlin family. Now, while this was happening, see, the Ashkenazim, certainly if the Sfardim followed these concepts, the Ashkenazim certainly were going to follow these concepts, because the Ashkenazim were always more machmir than the Sfardim when it came to Kedushin, and they never have Kod Kedushin, and you have to have with the minion. It's never a problem. But there's a third type of Jew arriving in Israel. And here we come back to my famous stories, the Yemenite Jews. And the Yemenite Jews, this is the most threatening experience. And I've told you why, and you have to understand this. When I see a chassid with a beard and payas, I walk right by, I go to sleep that night, I don't lose one ounce of sleep. He has a beard and payas, he wears a shroud. So what? So what? When you see a Yemenite Jew with a beard and payas, you shouldn't sleep at night unless you have a beard and payas. Because the Yemenite Jews were the least affected by outside culture. And it could very well be, when you hear the real Yemenite pronunciation, it could very well be that we're not Yotzei Kriyatshma, we're not Yotzei Davening, our entire Hebrew is totally incorrect. Could very well be. Could very well be. The Yemenites, the least outside influence. Now, here you have the Yemenite community, and slowly but surely they're starting to trickle down to Eretz Yisrael. Slowly but surely. Some of them, by the way, walked all the way from Sana, from Yemen. They would walk for days and days, came by foot. And they came here from their primitive Torah society, and I use the word primitive in a positive sense. In other words, primitive in the sense unaffected by all the later developments that affected the Ashkenazim, because we are the most, I don't have to tell you, the Sfardim today, with all the hatred for Ashkenazim that has been reborn, again, I have to give Shas a good deal of the credit, lo aleinu, for all this hatred for Ashkenazim. It's frightening, I thought it was gone. They handed out leaflets in every mailbox in Jerusalem a year ago. Knew who saw the leaflets? That the Ashkenazim are not real Jews. We are descendants of Melech Chazar, of the Khuzari king who converted. We're not real Jews. And they're the real Jews. So if the Sfardim say that in general, what should the Yemenites say? The Yemenites were the most unaffected by modern life. And then they come in Aliyah. And there, Houston, by the way, you have no idea how much of responsive literature is affected by the most difficult cases we have in modern times. Are Yemenites primitive in the sense, again, unaffected by all that happened in the rabbinic world, and they're living in their own little world, living out Pitora, 100% the way Jews lived at the time of the Mishnah, the way Jews lived at the time of the Talmud, and they come to Eretz Yisrael, and they continue their practices, and the world goes crazy because of it. And here you have the first recorded example that I know of. Now, it's very fascinating. According from a collection of works on Yemenite Jewry, it's called Meitimun Letzion. It's like a tradition dedicated in memory of the Rav. This was an entire volume dedicated only to Yemenite Jewry. The editors, these were two people that were still alive when I came in Aliyah. One of them was Shimon Gridi, they're both Yemenites. He was a big scholar. The other one was Yisrael Yeshayahu. Does anyone know who Yisrael Yeshayahu was? He was the speaker of the Knesset. He was a Taimani, he was a Rav, became a big disciple of Ben-Gurion. How the Taimanim, many Taimanim were like this. He still remained a Shomer Shabbat, don't misunderstand me. They worshipped the ground Ben-Gurion walked on. And Yisrael Yeshayahu was one of the stalwarts of the Avodah, Mifleget Avodah, the Labor Party. He was the Speaker of the Knesset. When I came in Aliyah, I remember him well. I remember he would quote, the guy knew half of Shas by heart. I was a kid, I could understand. Guy's not wearing a yarmulke, he's a member of Mapai. And then he knew half of Shas. The guy got up in the Knesset, suddenly half of Shas would fall out of his mouth. Now what you hear today in the Knesset? There isn't one religious Chavir Knesset who can learn, as maybe Hanan Parat is the only one. But outside of that, or maybe Yitzchak Meir too from the Maftal. But outside of that, come on, cut it out. The Parish, Shapiro, the Shas people, come on, Derry, cut it out. How did I come to you? And he would get up in the Knesset, and it took me a long time to learn that these Yemenites became devoted disciples of Ben-Gurion. Now, he was a scholar too. And he's the co-editor of this journal. It appeared in Tel Aviv in 1938. And it's on page 186. And I tell you, it's a document out of life, because you see already what happens here. You laugh and you laugh, because nothing has changed in our little Torah world. And the case is 1885. And what happened? And it describes that when the original Yemenites came in, the Yemenites are very modest, quiet people. And they simply assimilated. Some of them became like Sfardim, some of them became like Ashkenazim. And it's very interesting. Ashkenazim intermarried with Yemenites, and these marriages were very successful. I know many, even in modern times, it's very interesting. These were very modest people that could be very flexible. And they fit in. But then, when they had large numbers, they suddenly started feeling their oats. Come on, we're Yemenites. We have a different minhag. Vayehi Hayom, the 11th day of Chodesh Kislev, 1885, one of the newly arrived Yemenites gave a woman a pruta in the marketplace in front of two witnesses, like the minhag was in Taiman. Gentlemen, Yerushalayim exploded. It's return to the Dark Ages. A man, and mind you, the man was happy with the marriage, the woman was happy with the marriage, there was no parental opposition. The problem was, the man did what his father did in Sana. What did the father do in Sana? The father gave his mother a little coin in front of two witnesses in a tavern and said, Haret Mukadeshet li b'kesev zeh, k'dat Moshe v'Yisrael. And the son of this father did exactly the same thing on Rehov Meir Sharim in the heart of Jerusalem on the 11th day of Kislev in 1885. And the Chachamim and the Rabbanim went crazy. You're going to destroy the world here. We have ancient Takana, and they quoted all the Takana going back to Saloniki, and you have to have a minyan, and you have to have parental approval, and you have to have the rabbinate, and you have to have the Chacham Bashi, and what have you done? And I don't have to tell you, Yerushalayim is a city that thrives on religious machloket. There's only one city in the world today that has overtaken Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak. But in 1885, there wasn't a Bnei Brak, and all of Yerushalayim was one little, what do we call it? What's the term used in scholarship today? Yishuv Hayashan, with all that that implies. So I don't have to tell you, if I'm going to walk later this week, I bought myself a new cult, which I'm sure that's going to be checked for shot, and I said, sure, but I'll take it in, just they should look at it and tell me, make it. Whatever, I'm going to walk to my shul, I can tell you in advance, I'm looking forward to seeing all the charamim on the walls. It's great. Whenever you walk to Meir Sharim, wow, either someone has died, unfortunately, which is always true, because when they say you're dead, generally you're dead. In addition to that, all these charamim, it's great. The machloket, they took money from the government. They didn't take money. They did take money. They didn't reveal. There's now a big scandal. One of the big Eder Haredet institutions took 2.5 million shekel from the government while telling the Satna Rebbe they took nothing. They got money from America and got money from the government. Wow, they're really good Israelis. They did it on both sides. So when you walk to Meir Sharim today, could you imagine in 1885 what happened here? They were going crazy. What are you doing here? And it was the winter, not like this winter. It was a terrible drought. It's a beautiful description here. And they came together in all the shuls. Listen to this. They came together in all the shuls to daven. You know, the holes, I don't have to tell you, you've learned the Sechet Tanit. And the Teimanim gathered in their shul, and they followed the minhag of Teiman. When the Chachamim found out that they're gathering in their own shul to daven for rain, they sent them a shliach. And the shliach came in the name of the rabbis and said to them, what are you? Are you going to be Ashkenazim? Are you going to be Sfardim? Be aware that if you're going to be part of the Ashkenazic community, and it's interesting how they gave them a choice, that the real Sfardim didn't consider the Teimanim part of them. You're a different breed. Make your choice. But wherever you go, make up your mind that you're going to follow the Takanit. You can't undermine us. You can't get married in the marketplace. We haven't been doing this for hundreds of years. You're going to destroy Yiddishkeit. Make up your mind. So the Taimanim answered, they held a meeting. Vayanu rabin mein asafim, ki yavo liyot l'makelam yuchedet l'ubiti sol l'mashmat, Makela Acheret. In modern Hebrew it would say Kihila Acheret, but it's quoting the document, but it's beautiful. The Teimanim met, it's like Balabatim, and they said, our honor is at stake. We're not Ashkenazim and we're not Sfardim. We're Teimanim. We're going to be our own choir. We use the word today Kihila, our own community. Here it says Makela. Makela here is not the sense of choir. It's Makela in the sense of community. We're going to be our own community. We want to continue our minhagim. And if we want to get married in the street the way we did in Sana, that's our privilege. And don't interfere with us. All right? The rabbis now were told off. This is now a serious problem. They're telling the rabbis, butt out. We're going out on our own. Okay. Listen to this. This is so funny to the point of tears how nothing has changed. Nothing has changed in Jewish life. So the Rabbanim sent them a shliach, and the Rabbanim said, fine, you want to be a separate community, then you raise your own taxes and cover your own expenses. But don't expect us, the general community, to cover your expenses. You are your own community, fine, you're on your own. Yourselves, put up your own money, pay for yourselves, don't come to the Ashkenazim, and don't come to the Sfardim. Gentlemen, When they heard this about the taxes, about coughing up their own money, about covering their own expenses, this was the first big nail in the coffin. And not only that, now comes the L'shem Shemayim, but I don't want to give you an art scroll view of life. Believe me, this is the main reason, the taxation. They heard the taxation, you know, everyone is a big shot. Yeah, you're demanding this, you're demanding that, fine, do what you want. Do it on your own. You understand? I taught Michalas so many years, so then the big explosion came. The winner was Rabbi Koopman. Rabbi Koopman has the money. All these poor rabbis who were fighting and it was caught up in so much machloket. Schnarrez, where do you come to Rabbi Koopman? How can you defeat him? You understand? He's the boss, the one who has the money. This is the way life works. These poor Taimanim, they were big shots. Everyone has ethnic pride. They're up there 100 years before their time, 110 years before the ethnic pride. We're Taimanim. We're not Ashkenazim. We're not Sfadim. Fine. Then they tell them, all right, be Taimanim. You're your own community, your own taxes, your own expenses, your own budget. Don't bother the general community. Do what you want. That affected them. Then it goes on, the Ashkenazic and Sfadic Rabbanim spoke with the Taimanim Rabbanim. And they pleaded with them, please influence your community. Lo tov lehem lihipared me'acheichem toshvei hayir. That it's not good that you can't have a new minhag. Imagine what it's going to do to the overall community, Ashkenazim, the Sfadim. No one gets married on the marketplace. No one gets married without a minion. No one gets married without their parents present. No one gets married without a rav. What are you going to do to the overall community? So the Rabbanim added the religious motif. They pleaded with them, Shichnu otam, dibru al libam. And then, finally, listen to these words, Achrei rikuach dvarim rabin. You can imagine how many meetings there were, how much controversy, how much debate, how much dialogue. Kiblu aleim litmanei k'minag acheinu hasfadim asher ba'eretz hakodesh, and they were makabel on themselves to become part of the overall Sfadic community. And the document goes on, lo yavru shanim rabot vayitbolelu bein hasfadim v'lo yechatzuad. And it didn't take many years, and the Yemenites completely assimilated among the Sfadim. They became part of the Sfadic community. They no longer went out on their own. And to a certain degree, they were indistinguishable from the rest of the Sfadim. But this is what a marvelous, marvelous document. Of course, who would ever dream in the year 1995, one of the problems among many others on the Israeli scene is Harav Uzi Meshulam. And what is the problem of Rav Uzi Meshulam, who's now in jail awaiting trial? It's the Yemenite problem. It came to the surface. Exactly what we're describing here, that's exactly the heart of the Uzi Meshulam and his followers and his challenge and the shooting and the standoff with police and murder, and it goes on. Who could ever believe? But this is what happens in 1995. At least in 1885, they didn't kill each other. They just got married on the streets. A guy gave a girl a ring and for a putar in front of two eidim, got married on Rehov Machne Yehuda or Rehov Meir Sharim, which existed then. Re'elo Aleinu, when the Yemenites act up, they start a shootout war with the police. Now, but here we are in the state of Israel. What we're going to get involved with next time we meet, we're going to get involved with actual cases that happened in the Sfadic community here, and you're going to see unbelievable tshuvat. We're going to get involved with the Ribbaz, with an unbelievable tshuva. He gets involved in Sfadim and Ashkenazim. It will be good. Just get yourself a little bit background on who the Ribbaz was. I would suggest to you in a moment, She'ein yom ve'ein laila, and you're not suffering with the Yoredeya, look into the Rakafet Aharon, under Ribbaz. I think it's the first article. Am I right? The first article on the English side? Is it the first article, right? The American side? Look into it just to get historic background, because we're going to deal with an unbelievable chiv of the Ribbaz. And then we're going to get involved in a machloket that shook the state of Israel during this century already, with Ruth, the Georgian Ruth, Ruth HaGeorgiot. And it's mind-boggling, because there too there's the problem of the ingathering of the exiles and the minhagim that they're bringing with them. And here you're trying to forge one people, and how difficult it is when you have everyone coming in from an old country where they had wonderful minhagim. And over that, the Ruth HaGeorgiot, the state of Israel shook. And it happens that of some of the respondents, I know their very grandchildren. It's amazing. It's not ancient history. So to reiterate, first of all, I want to say Shevach V'Adayel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As you can understand, I just came back Thursday night, and Baruch Hashem, I was able to teach today, and I hope B'tuv Tam V'dat. Number two, what did we do today? We went into the Sephardic world. We followed up Saloniki. Very fascinating. Who is closer? See, it's not only halachically, sociologically. And the truth is, it hangs fire. Does your mother really care more about the interest of the girl, or is it the brothers? Doesn't the mother want to see the daughter married? And the brothers, maybe they really know the boy better. I mean, who knows someone if not for his peers? I know a case like this where I don't want to use the vulgar language, but a very chashuva people from Brooklyn, Torah Vadas people, chashuva people here in Israel, chashuva rabbinic families, and there was one boy that all his friends had a bad name for him. They used to call him the jerk. I'm saying it Balashan. It goes, yeshiva boys, some of their language. Only at the OU convention did I see language that was worse, as you might have heard, but forget about that. But yeshiva boys had terrible. So they used to call this guy the jerk. Let's say the jerk. And a very prominent rabbi tells me, one day my cousin comes home and says, I'm engaged. Who's she engaged to? The jerk. And your mother was happy, the girl is engaged, and all have anyone who knew this guy, they wanted a Rif Kriya. And sure, they got married, they got divorced, but Zivik Sheni, she married my childhood Chavruta. But who really knew the boy better? The mother, who, oh, thank God, my daughter is married, or the friends? It's not a simple question. But the psak was Lashon B'nei Adam. And Lashon B'nei Adam, after all, the mother is closer than the brothers, and I would like to believe that deep down, the mother doesn't want to see the daughter fall into a trap. Although I have to be honest with you, Jonathan, I'm not certain that that is always correct. Okay, then we went into the Chacham Bashi, and that document is historically so important, and for God, who's mastering Israeli law, this is the basis of what later develops into everything we have today. And what's fascinating about the document, the Balabatim, look how nothing has changed. Hatakifim. Ashirim, Takifim, nothing has changed. They own the rabbi. They can tell the rabbi what to do. Burial, very fascinating. Tie that together with Reb Chaim, with the Ish Halacha. Fascinating document. Avner, Torah comes to life before your eyes. Then, the Yemenite Aliyah, and what do we see with the Yemenite Aliyah? There too, money and honey, and we're a separate community. And if you're a separate community, pay your own taxes, don't take from the kahal. Suddenly, the voices are silent. And there was a little bit L'shem Shemayim. The rabbis pleaded with them. And ultimately, the Yemenites become Sfadim. And until today, generally speaking, we consider the Yemenites Sfadim. Although I have to tell you, part of the tragedy of modern Israel is this stress on ethnic, what Shas did to us, Hashem Yirachem. And it brought out, because I thought all that hatred was disappearing. You have no idea how deep the hatred is. And the more Haredi the circles get, the more the division gets, if you understand what I'm saying. And of course, the Yemenites claim their share of the pie. Because after all, it may very well be, and this has to be investigated, and no one has investigated properly, what happened to those Yemenite children who disappeared. And I want to tell you, I know people who know Rabuzi Meshulam. Some people tell me he's crazy. Other people tell me he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he's not crazy. He's just overwhelmed by the tragedy of the Yemenite children that disappeared, and no one has given an accounting for it. So I don't dismiss, let me tell you, I don't want to dismiss Uzi Mishalem. I would be much happier if the government set up an impartial committee of Dayanim and Rabbanim and Supreme Court judges, and they did a real investigation. Did Ben-Gurion really do this? But see, no one will do it here, because then it'll come out, the Mapai of old, which is the Avodah of today, robbed children from their parents, so they're worried they'll lose votes in the next election. Of course they'll lose votes. No one in their right mind should vote for the descendants of such thieves. But nevertheless, there's never been an investigation. But this Yemenite problem, here you have it halakhically, you have it emotionally, and this problem has reared its ugly head today. Unfortunately, once again, it's on the agenda. Be'ezrat Hashem, Tuesday, it's a $10,000 IOU to walk into class. Now, I have no time to collect them, to file them, to put them into my vault, but a Rebbe has to trust his Talmud. When you join the Israeli army, after you finish basic training and you're sworn in, you take 1 foot forward. That 1 foot forward means you are now a member of the IDF and accept all its pledges and rules and regulations to live or to die. It's quite a frightening pledge that you have to make. Gentlemen, if you walk into class on Tuesday, it means you've accepted all the rules and regulations. That is Tuesday. It's the Rav. I tremble. I sit here in fear of what I will hear. I will cry. I can't help it. You'll have to forgive me. Next Sunday, I wouldn't come to class unless you're wearing armor and you're not afraid to hear an honest person speak. You're totally free to disagree with me, but listen to me carefully. Read up on all current Israeli history. Come into class totally conversant with the whole development of the Zionist movement, the nascent movement in Atziv, Chibat Zion, the Mizrahi, the Aguda, the whole split within Aguda like an amoeba, once and twice and thrice and four times. Be totally conversant. Know all of the Ish Halacha by heart, the Chamesh Drashot backwards and forwards. Know the way the Rav would breathe air. And when you'll know all that, you'll understand me without any difficulty whatsoever. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for honoring me with your presence today. We had almost 100% outside of one boy busy with graduate school. I hope they don't have a homosexual club in that graduate school wherever he's going. But Hashem Yirachem, until we meet again in health and happiness, Bas Vedanya. Shalom, please call me tonight. Tell me that it was... Thank you.